Yeah, a little early. Yeah, we're a little early. Just one. We're normally, we start at 1 o'clock, but we are starting right after the Blackhawks post game here. Just going to do a little extra half an hour this morning. So we're here right now. All right. We're here. It's live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. And it is Thursday morning, so we'll play Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. And that is One Artist, Three Songs. One Artist, Three Songs at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to wrap up some of the post-Halloween stuff. We're going to talk about the Halloween candy that you got lying around the house. I want to talk about some of the costumes that I've seen that people were wearing. You know, that they've posted. Now, since we have social media, even if we don't get any trick-or-treaters or we go out, we see a bunch of costumes online. I got no trick-or-treaters. This is, I think, the seventh year in a row where the place where I'm at where I've not gotten any trick-or-treaters. So, anyway, I was asleep during most of the prime. I was asleep during most of the prime trick-or-treating time. So I would have missed them anyway. I wouldn't have answered the door. So, yeah, Halloween, a fun time. And we'll wrap up the Halloween. Then we're going to talk about sleeping and sleep patterns, and you know, the people who work and are awake during this hour or work this shift have to do some special things in order to get normal sleep. And so we'll talk a little bit about that when we got some unique sleep stories to talk about. And there's a lot more going on here. We got a little food again. We always love to talk about food. We got a couple of food topics to jump into later on. It's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Triple Play Thursday requests. 312-981-7200. And we're here until 5 a.m. So that's what's coming up. And in just a couple of minutes, our guest is going to be Michael Osaki. You know Michael Osaki. He's from Baseball in the Attic. He is a master sports memorabilia appraiser. He's a speaker. He contributes to Parade Magazine. You can check out baseballintheattic.com. And he joins us every once in a while to talk about sports memorabilia and to appraise, you know, to give you guys some help. If you've got some sports memorabilia in the house or in a closet somewhere hidden away in a box, and you want to know, you know, about what it's worth, Michael's going to join us to talk about that. And we'll take your phone calls and your texts with your questions about some of the sports memorabilia or baseball cards or any of that kind of stuff that you have, autographs, any of that. Michael will help you out. He's a pro. And when he joins us, we always get a bunch of people who are calling in to see if their stuff is worth anything. So get your calls in because we'll be talking with Michael in just a few minutes. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get your sports memorabilia appraised by Michael Osaki, who also has some interesting stuff that he has posted about, and he writes for Parade Magazine, and we'll talk about that too. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's talk to my great producer Dan Shugru. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. We're early.
Yes.
We're early. Normally, we're just kind of getting everything ready in the studio, right, and so on and so forth at this time, but we're on the air right now. So, yeah, it's Thursday. How did the Halloween go for the kids?
Yeah, very well. Emily was a princess. Olivia was a ladybug. It worked out very nicely. We didn't go far. We just went to the neighbors we know, five or six houses down either way on our street. And then, we went over to my folks' place, as well. But yeah, they had a blast, and, Olivia took a minute to warm up to it, but then would not let go of her bag.
The candy bag?
Right. Would not let go of her candy bag. I tried to pick her up and grab the bag, and she would not let go. Olivia's 18 months, so it's really funny. And the other part of it was when she realized she was allowed to reach into, you know, candy dishes, you know, some people just held out the candy dish and let the kids to take out. She kept going back in, you know, she'd pause, she'd take it, she'd put it into a bag, and then she'd look up again, see it was still there, and then try to take it again. So she was all about it.
That's great, man. That is great. So I'm glad you had a good time. And Halloween, we'll wrap up the Halloween stuff with a little post Halloween topics that we'll do later on in the show. In the newsroom, Vic Vaughn doesn't actually start until 1. So normally we say hello to Vic Vaughn, and I think he's in the newsroom, but he's writing, he's prepping, and he's writing his 1 o'clock report, which we will hear from Vic. So we'll say hello to Vic, officially, because he doesn't start until 1. So we'll say our hello to Vic at 1 o'clock. So anyway, that's what's going on the show, starting a little earlier this, this morning, but, you know, we're here until 5 o'clock, and lots of fun stuff happening. And again, Michael Osaki is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. He is in the PPG paints waiting green room, and we'll bring him in just a couple of minutes. Again, he's a sports memorabilia appraiser. If you have any sports memorabilia, you got baseball cards or any kind of autographed stuff, or just any unique sports memorabilia, grab it now and describe it to us, and Michael will be able to help you out. And we'll have that happening right after we take a break here. 312-981-7200. Talk, text, lines are open. Sports memorabilia appraising will begin as soon as we get back. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, Michael Osaki from Baseball in the Attic will be here live to help you out. Again, 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. A little early. Normally, we're on at 1 o'clock, but we wanted to the game. It was a late Hawks game tonight, and so they just did the post game, and we came on right after that. So we started at 12:30 this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday here. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. We're going to do a little post-Halloween wrap-up and talk about sleep and food and all kinds of other fun stuff as we are here until 5 a.m. on this Thursday morning. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. All right. We just followed a sporting event, so we thought that would be nice to just jump right back into talking a little bit of sports. Michael Osaki is from Baseball in the Attic. He is a master sports memorabilia appraiser. He's a speaker. He contributes to Parade Magazine, and the website is baseballintheattic.com. And whenever Michael's on, we always try to help listeners out via talk or text at 312-981-7200. Describe some sports memorabilia or, you know, autographed items or baseball cards or any of that kind of stuff. It falls under the umbrella, and maybe we can help you out. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Michael to the show. Michael, how are you?
Nick, happy Halloween. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. Give everybody the story. It's, you know, we've told the story before, but for those people who might not have heard it, how you became... it all started with a shoebox full of baseball cards.
It did. Back in 1997, so over 20 years ago, my grandfather got me this shoebox of cards for my birthday. And the cards inside were from the 1950s, 1960s, early 70s. And it got me on the hunt of not only trying to find more of them, but figure out why is, if I'm looking at the same card, there's two of them, why is one card $10 and one card $50? And so I learned it was about corners, the centering, print defects, all these different types of things. And so that's kind of led me to where I am today, 21 years later.
Now, how does one become an appraiser?
Yeah, so over many years, I take a course through ISA, International Society of Appraisers, which actually is right here in Wacker Drive. And they certify appraisers not just through sports, but antique medical instruments, fine art, jewelry, dinosaur bones. And you have to obviously pass a test, but you have to be a noted authority in your field. And so I do a lot of public speaking. I contribute to Parade Magazine. Last year, Forbes Magazine named me the Dean of Cracker Jack Baseball Cards. I consult with wealthy Asian clients on the investment opportunity in sports memorabilia, as they're now seeing this as an asset class. And so it really kind of runs the gamut. Appraising is my life, and I love it. I wouldn't change a thing for the world. Chicago is home, but I travel a lot.
Right. So this organization that you're talking about, what right here on Wacker, what's it called again?
The acronym is ISA, International Society of Appraisers.
And so that's the association that covers all appraisers from antique all the way through, and that's really fascinating. I didn't know that such a place existed that. All of those categories fall under the umbrella of this organization. I had no idea that was a thing.
Yep, exactly.
How long they've been around? They've been around for a long time.
Decades, yeah.
Yeah.
Long time.
And they're based right here in Chicago, yep. Right on Wacker.
You got it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. So they have tests that they give out for any type of appraiser, any and all types of appraisers. You go through them in order to get your
Yes, and not only that, it's ongoing education, right? It's not like set it and forget it. You have to have a certain amount of hours. You have to be on the up and up. You have to recertify every couple years. So it's definitely not just one and done.
Okay. Well, now that you're an appraiser and that you do a lot of traveling and you do a lot of writing and stuff, do you still have time to hunt down for memorabilia and for cards that you that, that you like? And you still go out and do collecting, right?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what you've gotten recently.
Yeah. And so one thing I should mention to the listeners is if I appraise something, I cannot buy it because there's a conflict of interest, right? Because theoretically, I can tell you, I can say, Nick, this item is worth $100, but maybe it's worth $100,000, and then I buy it for $100. So I cannot appraise something and buy it. But sometimes people will call me and they'll say, Michael, I know what I have. I don't want an appraisal. I want you to buy it. Make me an offer. And so I'll go in if I'm interested in what they have, and I'll and if they agree, great. If not, no big deal.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, what have you picked up lately?
I picked up some great Cracker Jack cards from 1914.
Explain what the Cracker Jack cards are for
people. So most people are familiar with the Cracker Jack brand. It's the caramel-coated popcorn that's sold at your grocery store or at the baseball stadium. And they've been around for a long time. But in 1914 and 1915, they inserted baseball cards into packages of Cracker Jacks.
So, because when you get a package of Cracker Jack, you always get a little toy or a little prize inside.
Tchotchke, as I call it.
Yeah. And so in those 2 years, they put baseball cards inside.
That's right. And those baseball cards today are the most valuable prizes of all of the Cracker Jack prizes. Mm-hmm. In fact, a couple months ago, the annual Cracker Jack convention was held here in Chicago, and I spoke at that convention.
Right.
And some of the attendees, showed me some of their Cracker Jack baseball cards. It was fascinating.
Yeah, I can't believe there's a Cracker Jack convention, and it's right here in Chicago. Well, I mean, it probably moves around the country, right? And it would just so happen to be in Chicago this year.
It moves around the country. The age demographics, as you can imagine, skews older. People over the age of 60, who've been avid Cracker Jack collectors for decades upon decades.
Yeah. All right. So what were the cards that you got?
Yep. So some Hall of Famers. So Honus Wagner was one of them. Definitely not the Joe Jackson. I'm looking for a Joe Jackson. That's a very rare card, very valuable. Obviously, everyone knows Joe Jackson with the Black Sox.
Right.
I'm potentially throwing that World Series. I picked up a very low grade Ty Cobb. And a couple of commons, like the John Doe's of the world.
Did you get those at the convention?
No.
Oh.
Those were, a couple called me on the East Coast, and they said, we've had these cards for a long time, and we no longer have any use for them. You know, we've done some research on them, so we know some of these can be quite valuable. We'd like you to look at the condition and make us an offer, and if we feel it's acceptable, then we'll do the deal.
Well, congratulations!
Thanks.
The Ty Cobb card, it's kind of beat up though.
Yeah, it's really beat up.
Yeah,
which is freak. I mean, don't forget these cards are over 100 years old.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I expect to see cards in beat up condition. In fact, sometimes when I see cards that are 100 years old in near perfect condition, it raises an eyebrow like, is this a reprint? Is this real?
Yeah.
Because no one saved cards as investment opportunities back then.
Right. That's true. All right. Well, we already got a bunch of people who are calling in. If you want to call in or text with your sports memorabilia, Michael can help you out. Now, again, we want to preface this by saying, this is just by your by the listener and the caller's description of it. It's always better if you see it. That's one of the most important things we want to preface here.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I think that's a very important caveat. Yes, it'd be best if I saw a picture via text message or email. You can go to my website, baseballintheattic.com, or email michael@baseballintheattic.com for pictures. But yes, pictures are always great. But sometimes, when people call in, I know what it is. If it's a Walter Payton signed football, that's legit. I know it's worth, $500, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Hopefully today the calls will be as exciting as last time. I don't remember if you recall, but the calls were incredible. We had an inflatable.
Didn't we have a guy? We had a guy who stole silverware from somebody's restaurant. Who's what?
Brett Favre.
Brett Favre.
It was like plastic silverware from Brett Favre's restaurant.
No, I think it was metal. So I think it was actual serving silverware. But he took like a napkin, the wrapped up napkin. And the silverware from Brett Favre's restaurant, and thought maybe that was worth something.
Oh yes, you know what? I think it was metal because during the commercial break, he texted me a picture, and then I showed it to him.
Right.
And we were cracking up.
Yeah.
So we had that caller. We had a caller who had an inflatable Dick Butkus doll. And then, lastly, my favorite was a woman called in. She saw Ryan Sandberg on some celebrity cruise. I don't know where, Bahamas, Cabo San Lucas.
Right.
And there was a photo of her and Ryan Sandberg. She wanted to know what the value was of the photo, but she kept on talking about how great her bikini swimsuit was.
Yeah.
And then I think she kind of was alluding, you know, Michael, can you appraise what my swimsuit is worth? It was crazy.
Yeah, well, we have some questionable callers. Who call up here? You know, we're the overnight show, so that happens, Michael. All right, well, let's see. Let's start it off and see what we got going here. Let's talk to Scott on WGN. Hi, Scott.
Hi, I got on the early edition. I'm really happy.
Yeah. It's the early edition of the show. We don't officially start until 1 usually, but we're here early. But go ahead.
I know. Okay. Hi, Michael. I got a couple things. Start with the easy one first. In, I think, 1996, the Bulls released, it was like a leather-bound, it's a leather-bound book, celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Bulls. It's a really nice book. I have it signed by John Paxson, Bob Love, and Steve Kerr.
Where's Michael Jordan on that, Scott? He's missing.
I have never met Michael Jordan. I'm sorry.
Okay. So something like that is going to be worth under $100, whether it's $50, $75, will depend upon the strength of the signatures and kind of the placement. But, you know, it is a unique and different item, not something that people will see on a daily basis. And you said you have something else, Scott?
Yeah, I have another book. It was the 85 Bears after they won the Super Bowl. There was a book called Portrait of Victory written by Kevin Lamb. And I there was like a $10 version, but I bought there was a leather-bound version of it. I have it signed by all the Bears starters.
Whoa.
These were all signatures I got. Plus, I got Coach Ditka, Dick Stanfield, and Mike McCaskey signed it also.
Walter Payton?
So it's got over 30. Yes, Walter Payton.
That's the key signature. You know, of course, he died in 1999, and really anything,
sure.
So anything team-related to the Bears, it's really important to have Walter Payton and then secondarily Mike Ditka, which you just said is on there. So something like that would be worth several hundreds of dollars, again, depending upon condition, exactly who's on there, the quantity, but that's a really good and unique piece, so congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you. Just a kind of side question. Did you know, is there any value? I used to be a Bulls season ticket holder, and then after the games, I would go around looking for other season tickets that were on the floor. The Bulls season, you know, they're kind of large tickets with pictures of all the different players and stuff like that. Is there any value to old tickets like that?
What decade are we talking about, Scott?
Oh, we're talking about the championship decade.
Got it.
So the 90s.
The 90s, yeah.
Yeah, the 90s.
Some are more available than others. So, for example, if, you know, Michael Jordan had a great night and came out and had 55 points or something like that, or they were playing a great opponent, they vary in value, again, depending on condition, $10 to $80, $90, $100, somewhere in there. But if you have, let's say, 100 of them, you're definitely going to have some great group value there.
Okay. All right, Scott.
Okay, so it would be kind of game-specific, what happened in that game?
Some of them, yes, and then the others would be based on condition.
Okay.
All right, Scott.
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, man, take care.
You.
There you go. That's Scott, and he's got some unique stuff there. By the way, did I hear correctly? Derrick Rose scored 50 points last night.
Yes, I couldn't believe it.
What the hell? He didn't break a bone either after doing it. He didn't pull a hammy.
Nick,
I mean,
it was incredible. You know, I saw the article. I thought it was on The Onion or something.
No, I know. I saw it and I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So anyway, all right. Michael, hang on for a second, okay, because we have to break for the news. And coming up to the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. More with Michael Osecki from Baseball in the Attic, and he is a master sports memorabilia appraiser. And if you've got some stuff laying around the house, you want to know how much it's worth, we can give you a cursory, a ballpark figure on that. We got some phone lines open, and you can text us as well, 312-981-7200. We're going to hit the news right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We started earlier this morning. That's why you're not hearing my my regular opening. Normally we're on at 1 o'clock, but we followed a very late Hawks game. They did post-game until 12:30, and then we started a little bit early. But I want to say officially hello to my news guy here in the newsroom, Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
How are you, buddy?
Very good. Very well.
Good, good, good. It's a Thursday morning, and it was weird to introduce you at 1 o'clock. I never get to do that.
I'm a creature of habit. That felt weird to me.
You know. Well, you're here all morning. Yeah. I just wanted to give the official hello, because I normally do that right around this time every morning. And Vic will be in the newsroom covering everything Dan Shigeru is producing. And we're here until 5 o'clock. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up, we got some post-Halloween stuff to talk about, costumes that we've seen, candy that we've got that people are eating. And we're going to talk about sleep patterns and other things. That's all right here on 720 WGN. The phone lines are open. Also, Triple Play Thursday. Here, man, Triple Play Thursday. As one artist, three songs. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And that's also the number to call right now, or to text right now, with your sports memorabilia. Michael Osaki is my guest from Baseball in the Attic. He is a master sports memorabilia appraiser. He's a speaker. He contributes to Parade Magazine. His website is baseballintheattic.com. And if you've got something lying around the house that you think might be worth something, or you're just curious, call us up, describe it, and Michael will help you out. 312-981-7200. Talk and text lines are open. Michael, welcome back.
Nick, just to be clear, I will not be here until 5 a.m.
No, you won't. No, Michael will not be here until 5 a.m. The others, the rest of the crew on the show will. So that's what's going on. But Michael, welcome back. We're going to talk a little bit later on about some of the stuff that you've written for Parade magazines. And you're heading to Naples, Florida in a few weeks. What's that all about?
Yeah, I'll be there for a couple of days in mid-November. And this is a place I've been to once before this year. A couple months ago, and there is just a plethora of items there for me to look at. What happens is these people are snowbirds down there, and so being that it's starting to get cold out in upstate New York, Chicago, Minnesota, Massachusetts, all the snowbirds are down there in Florida, but specifically Naples, and there are a lot of baseball cards I have to look at, some autographs, so it's going to take me the better part of about 3 days to really a look at everything. I have a lot of different appointments.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, have fun there, man.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. We've got some people who are calling in with some questions. Let's talk to Georgia on WGN. Hi, Georgia.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a 1929 Lane Tech Chicago City Champ game ball that my dad had from playing in the game against the New York City High School Champs. Played in Wrigley Field. The White Sox were playing the Yankees, and the watch fobs and game ball was signed by both Babe Ruth and Gehrig.
Wow.
And I'm wondering, the signatures have faded. My dad was a teenager. He was a sports fan, and so other people had signed the ball throughout the years. It was, like you said, with baseball cards, it wasn't seen as something to be pristine and kept under glass, although later it was put in a Lucite ball holder.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. So the first thing you mentioned was Lane Tech. And, Nick, if I think about Lane Tech, I mean, this has been
the original Lane Tech.
Right. And, you know, Lane Tech has been such a good staple in Chicago for decades upon decades.
My dad went there.
Exactly. So everyone knows Lane Tech, very popular, great school. The items, the signatures that you have, I hate to just start throwing out numbers without seeing the strength of the signatures, because the Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig are obviously very popular, very valuable signatures. So the best thing is just email michael@baseballintheattic.com or text me some photos, 312-379-9090.
Now, I can't do that, but tell me this, michael at
baseballintheattic.com.
Okay.
michael@baseballintheattic.com. This is something that he'll probably definitely have to see. You know, he can't give you really, can't just throw out numbers, because he's got to be able to see that one.
Exactly.
I have other Chicago sports memorabilia. He was recruited to play in the Grant Park Baseball League for bragging rights. The Marshall Field store for men recruited him they gave him a job selling shoes, which ended up being his career as a manufacturer's rep, but he was recruited because of being in the game. And I have a Marshall Fields Grant Park League trophy. He participated in Park District sports, and I have a Daily News competition medal, Crane Tech letter sweater, and
what a
other
fascinating
things.
This is fascinating to me. This is great. If you just send me an email, I can get in touch with you. I can call you or send me some pictures. But really fascinating, and thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. It's a nice memory to bring up.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you, Georgia. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Some of those things that she's describing are more, you know, personal items that you would have. They wouldn't necessarily be worth, you know, a ton of money, but obviously they're worth a lot to her in terms of what, you know, what her father represented to her and stuff like that, but they're not going to be worth a ton. You're not going to be able to get a ton of money if you try and sell it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on what it is, who signed it. Don't forget, Nick, most of the things that I see, most of the people think that the value is more than what I think it's worth. Because, you know, they have a great story attached to it. It's been in the family for, let's say, 50 years. It's been passed down for a long time.
Right, right.
It's kind of like selling your house. You can put your house on the market for $1 million, but, you know, maybe a couple offers come in for $300,000. People are always inflating the values of what they have.
Well, there's a lot of emotion attached to it. That's why.
Exactly.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Tom on WGN. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. Back in 1963, my sister and I went to a Cubs game, and we hung out afterwards just hoping to get an autograph. And lo and behold, we were getting desperate. Nobody was there, and we just kind of stood around. And finally, we see this guy walking across the field because, as you know, it was not well built up. And my sister says, boy, it looks like Ken Hubbs. And sure enough, he was carrying a brown paper bag of groceries, and we just walked up to him, introduced ourselves, and he signed an autograph book that I have. And then I have an autograph also of Brian Piccolo, who I met at a father-son banquet at Weber High School.
Okay, so Ken Hubbs, this is a great autograph. And for all you listeners, a lot of people may not know the name Ken Hubbs, but he won the Rookie of the Year in 1962. Unfortunately, tragically, several months later, he passed away in an airplane crash in Utah, or Colorado. I think it was Utah. And so there are not a lot of genuine Ken Hubbs signatures out there. I've seen a lot of fakes over time or traced over signatures. So that item is going to be valuable, several hundred dollars there. But also, kind of with a similar previous caller, just send me an email or text me a photo, and I'll take a look at that.
Wow, okay. it's Ken Hubbs. That's because I saw your eyes light up when you said Ken Hubbs.
Yeah,
yeah, and of course he went by Kenny, but I just happened to say Ken Hubbs.
Yeah,
yeah. And as far as Brian Piccolo autograph, is that of any significance as well? Or
yes, absolutely, him too. So there's also a great story with him too. So both of those. It's really interesting. Being in Chicago, you have Ken Hubbs and Brian Piccolo. Obviously, we could talk for hours on each one of them. But
sure.
But yeah, if you just send me an email, we'll talk.
And you know what? I did send a text message with regards to a Sports Illustrated Johnny Bench cover. So I'll leave the call in case you want to refer to that at all, if they have that message.
I've got it right here. Yeah, I've got it.
Okay, thanks much.
All right,
take care.
Tom, take care.
Bye-bye.
And Tom's text was, he sent in a text before he called. Says, I have a Johnny Bench autographed March 3rd, 1972 Sports Illustrated Redemption for the Reds with Johnny Bench on the cover. The neat thing about this SI is that it's from the office of the Chicago Bears, and the mailing label is Chicago Bears 173 West Madison Avenue. So, but it's autographed by Bench.
That's interesting because generally a Johnny Bench signed photo, magazine, book, $50-$60. But I think because of the Bears connection, it can notch it up a little bit more, $80-$85, maybe even $100, depending upon who's bidding. But it's, you know, you have the Cincinnati Reds, you have the Chicago Bears. It's kind of a different, unique piece. I don't know how many people will be interested, but there is some value there.
Okay, and that's Tom. He's got some cool stuff then. Jane in Evanston sent a text that says, I have an autographed basketball and baseball autographed by Michael Jordan. Are these worth anything? What are these worth?
Okay, yes. So basketball signed by Michael Jordan, assuming it's just Michael Jordan, not anybody else. Because if there's additional signers, that will usually take the value down,
right,
unless it's the championship team. But you could be looking at $600 for a signed Michael Jordan basketball, $700 for a signed Michael Jordan basketball, somewhere in there.
Wow.
A baseball will be a little bit less, a couple $100 less.
Wow. Jeez. Okay. 815 says, usually when people talk about sports cards, it's baseball cards. What are some of the more valuable cards in other sports than baseball?
So that's a great question. So, yes, the text message person is correct, but I would say 75% or 80% of the things I see are baseball related. Baseball
yeah.
cards, baseball yeah. autographs, things like that. Some of the great not baseball related cards could be a Jim Brown rookie card, Bronco Nagurski, Jim Thorpe. There's some great sets from 1952 Bowman football set is great. And then you have the 1969-1970 basketball tall boy set. Some great rookies in there, John Havlicek. In fact, that John Havlicek card from that set in mint condition just sold for $95,000 or
$100,000. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So there you go.
There's a lot of, it's not just baseball cards. All right, Michael, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Michael Osaki is with us. BaseballInTheAttic.com is the website. You can, Michael at BaseballInTheAttic.com is the where you can actually send him an email if you're interested. We got a couple of phone lines open if you want to jump in here. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for more sports memorabilia talk and appraising. All right. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And it's Nick DiGilio here in the Allstate Skyline Studios on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday is going to start later. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. We were just talking off the air. Michael is going to hang out with us until 2 o'clock. He'll be here till 2. So you keep the calls coming. Michael Osaki of Baseball in the Attic is a master sports memorabilia appraiser. He's a speaker. He contributes to Parade Magazine and more. And he is here live in studio. We're taking phone calls and texts about stuff that you may have, sports memorabilia that you may have, and he can give you an idea about what it's worth. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. So let's get back to it because we got a bunch of people on the line. We got sure. texts coming in. It's 312-981-7200. And here is Mary on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Michael. Great to talk to you.
Hi, Mary.
Hi there. Here's what I have that I treasure as a lifelong Sox fan. In 2005, but it was June of that summer, I was given two fabulous gifts. One, an Ozzie Guillen jersey, which I've since had authenticated as truly one of his jerseys because of the coating on the label. And it's signed by all the team as of that date in June of 05. And at the same time, I was given a ball signed by that team. Now, I realized going on to the World Series a few months later, and I was thrilled to be at one of those games. I know the team changed a little bit before that point, but I do have those memorabilia from the team that was working toward that White World Series victory. So that's what I'm offering to you for your thoughts.
Sure. Okay, Mary. So, yes, the team would have changed a little bit right after the trading deadline, which would have been at the end of July, and yours was signed in June. However, assuming that you have on the jersey and the ball, let's say you have 22 to 25 signatures, that would be great because that is considered a team-signed item. A baseball could be $400 to $500, and a jersey could be a couple hundred dollars more, $600 to $700.
Okay.
Okay.
That's great to hear.
Okay.
Most of all, it's very sentimental value to us, but I'm thrilled to be talking to you and listening to this show, and it's nice to know that it has some value as well.
Okay, Mary.
Thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call.
Take care.
Thanks.
There you go. Now that she mentioned that she got authentication about the jersey. How does one do that? If it is an actual player jersey and not just somebody trying to rip you off? and it was never really Guillen's jersey. But how do you get that appraised?
And Nick, I'm glad you actually stopped the calls for a second, because this actually is really important. So Mary would have sent in these items to a third party authenticator. I don't know what company it was, but there are several. You can go online and Google and see which ones are credible.
Right.
And paid some money, and she sent in the item, and in return they sent it back and said that yes, these are genuine. This jersey is typical. They looked at the tagging, the stitching, and everything to make sure that it looks legit. That really is important. Not so much on the modern era jerseys per se, but if you go back 50, 60, 70 years, I mean, you know, if someone said that this was a Babe Ruth, you know, game worn jersey. Well, there's a huge difference between a Dick's Sporting Goods Yankees jersey and an authentic Babe Ruth gamer
of that time.
And so that is third party authentication does play a very important role in this industry for sure.
Now, third party identification, though, do you have to be careful about who you send your stuff to? I mean, they're reputable ones, but you want to make sure that you're going to the right place when you send your valuables to them.
Definitely. So there's one company, it's called PSA, and they're out in California, and they grade cards, but they also authenticate autographs and jerseys and bats. They're a pretty good one. They have shows across the country, or you could send it into them, and on their website you can see what the fees would be. And there's some other good ones out there as well, but you know, do your homework, talk to people. You don't want to be sending money into a place that's, you know, no good, or even worse, maybe they would do the old bait and switch on an item.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing that I was thinking about, is that, you know, if she sent this jersey off and then was sent one that wasn't Guillen, you know, Guillen's actual jersey.
Yeah,
you just got to make sure that these companies are legit, because there's a lot of people out there in every business who are trying to rip other people off.
Yeah, and one thing I'll say is, before you send stuff off, take a lot of snapshots with your phone. Most people have a smartphone, and so when it comes back, if you don't think that it's what you sent in, you can say, hey, look, on this date, this is what I sent you. Here are the photos on my, you know, iPhone or Android, and this is what it is. You sent me something different.
So make sure you have proof.
Exactly.
Make sure you have evidence and proof of what you send. But what's the name of the one that you recommend?
It's PSA. The website is psacard.com.
psacard.com. Okay, and they're reputable. You can send your stuff safely to them.
Yep, and they're also a publicly traded company. Yep.
Okay. All right, cool. Michael, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Michael Osaki is with us from Baseball in the Attic. That's his website, baseballintheattic.com. He's a master sports memorabilia appraiser. He's a speaker, and he contributes to Parade Magazine. Lots more stuff to talk about, and the phone lines and text lines are open for you with your sports memorabilia if you want to know in the ballpark how much it's worth. And again, one of the other things you can do is remember to, if you want to, take some pictures and send them to Mike via email, and it's easier for him to appraise it. But he can give you a ballpark figure this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We have to break here for the news. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DeGilio on 720 WGN. How's it going? We are here live in the Allstate Skyline studio on 720 WGN, and we're here until 5 a.m. We started a little bit earlier this morning. Came on after the Hawks postgame. The Hawks had a late game in Vancouver, and we will play the Express later on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text. Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday.
And it's one artist, three songs. Get those requests in now at 312-981-7200. And Michael Osaki is with us right now. He is of Baseball in the Attic, as master sports memorabilia appraiser, speaker, contributor to Parade Magazine. Baseballintheattic.com is his website. And we welcome Michael back. Michael, welcome back.
Nick, good to be here.
Hey, Dan, I just wanted to mention that the Hanging Chad episode of How I Met Your Mother is on right now.
There you go.
it's pretty funny. It's just a thing he put around his neck, the Hanging Chad thing. That's pretty funny.
Yep.
This is a Halloween episode, Michael, that we were talking about, Halloween-themed TV show episodes yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the How I Met Your Mother Halloween-themed episode. Dan was we were talking about really good Halloween-themed episodes, and that that's on right now. I guess they were doing a marathon through the night of Halloween themed episodes of TV shows. So
that's fun.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap up Halloween, some post Halloween stuff coming up a little bit later on. But Michael's with us right now, and he's gonna help you out if you got sports memorabilia laying around and you're kind of curious as to what it is and what it's worth. 312-981-7200. Let's talk with Kathy on WGN. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I want to see, I got some really great stuff that, well, I mean, it's great to me. I don't know that it's great to anybody else, but I have a Walter Payton autograph poster that's autographed by him, and the Monsters of Midway poster that's autographed by pretty much all of them. And I don't know if they're worth anything. They're worth something to me just because I love them so much, but would they be worth anything? So, or is it just stuff that I just keep hanging on my wall?
So I have a little secret. I also love Walter Payton. He was the first professional athlete that I ever met. If you go to my website and click on photos, you'll see me and Walter. I think it's circa 1994. I was just a little boy. And I'll always remember the conversation and talking to him, and he was such a great guy. His autograph is valuable. So the first poster that single signed, you're looking at about $250. The second poster, the Monsters of the Midway with Walter, and you think it's the whole team, or
it's three photos. One is of Walter Payton doing like a ginormous jump over everybody getting into the goal, and the other two are just, you know, photographs of him running and stuff.
Okay, so it's unsigned, correct?
Yes, that one is unsigned.
Right. Okay, so something like that would maybe be $30 to $40, and someone could frame it and put it up in their man cave. It'd look really nice.
All right.
Yeah, well, that's exactly where mine is, but I just was wondering about the Walter Payton one that was standalone, because he was my hero when I was a kid. My dad took me to a game, and ever since then, I've been a football freak.
All right.
Good for you.
All right, Kathy.
Appreciate the phone call.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. There you go. There's Kathy. So the Walter Payton signature. Another thing that we should mention is that the things that are signed, it's worth less if they're personalized. That's another thing that we should mention. If it says hey to John and then they sign it, it's worth less.
Yes, for the most part. So for example, let's say you had a Johnny Bench signed baseball to Nick from Johnny Bench, and you, Nick, wanted to sell that item to me. Well, my name is Michael.
Right.
And so I wouldn't pay a premium. In fact, I'd pay less because it says to Nick.
Right.
Now, a different type of inscription that could increase the value would be, let's say a player inscribes their career hit total or their Hall of Fame year, which is the year that they were inducted in the Hall of Fame, some special inscriptions. That would increase the value potentially, but when it comes to first names, yes, it's almost always decreases the value.
I got stuff signed by some of the Hawks ambassadors, and those guys always put Hall of Fame in the year that, you know, in the signatures that I have, at least. I know Bobby Hall
got
three or four Bobby Hall signatures, maybe even more than that, and he puts the year that he was in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, so that's always a little fun. You know, it's always fun, a little extra. And Bobby Hall, by the way, is so good about signing stuff. Like, he's one of those guys that, I mean, first of all, he's one of the best ever.
Yeah.
And he's also one of the nicest and funniest guys ever. And he will sign anything, you know. He's very happy about it, and, you know.
He loves interacting with the fans.
He does. Sure. And, you know, and the thing about it, all those years when those ambassadors, you know, were cut off from the team, and then when McDonough and Rocky took over, it changed everything. And you know, when they brought those guys back into the fold, one of the best moves that the Hawks made out of that Jay Blunk and those guys, you know, saying, hey, we got to reach out to the ambassadors and bring them back. And they come to every game. They're like at every game. You know, Makita was going to a whole bunch of games before he passed away.
I heard that.
You know, yeah. And before he got sick.
Yeah.
But, Yeah, so, I mean, those guys, it's really great. The Blackhawks organization is the classiest organization in sports, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of how they handle their relationship with the fans. It's just the best. All right, we got more people here. Let's see. Here is Michael on WGN. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, guys. I'm eating White Castle, talking to Nick DiGilio late at night. Life doesn't get better.
That's very good. What else would you be doing at 1:41 in the morning but eating down some sliders? That's good, man.
Get me a Crave case.
Yeah.
I was actually waiting for a long time because the guy in front of me had one of those.
yes.
Of course. Every time.
Yeah.
So I kind of have a funny story along with my thing. I was working on a TV commercial. It was a Hanes spot. I knew that Jordan was going to be part of the spot. And I had, I went out and bought one of these it was a Wheaties box that had the whole Bulls championship on it. It was the year that they won. And, I think it was like the winter after or whatever, the summer after, and we were shooting this thing. And so I brought the Wheaties box to the set. And I didn't want to be too, like, in his face and asking for his autograph because, I don't know, I was an improviser and I wanted to be cool and act like it didn't bluster me.
Right.
So when I was waiting in line at craft service, I kind of looked at him kind of funny, like, oh, like you're familiar, like you're someone I should know, right? And I go, you play with the Bulls? And he kind of laughed. He's like, ah. And then I said, do you think that you could get me Will Perdue's autograph? And he just burst out laughing. He thought that was like the funniest thing he'd heard in a week.
That's hilarious, man. That's hilarious. Oh, man. Good line, Michael. Good line, buddy. Wow. And, Ben, and then, by the way, Michael, you picked the perfect player to ask. Like, Will Perdue, of all people. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And so after that, like, once you make a celebrity laugh, then you can kind of, like, it's just like then he's a normal person and you're not worshiping him.
Yeah,
He signed this Wheaties box. And then, I went to the Container Store. I heard they have these Lucite boxes. So I've had it in a Lucite box, this full Wheaties thing that was signed by Michael Jordan, and it was the championship edition. So I don't know. What's something like that worth?
300 or 350.
How about that?
And I think you've done a good job. I think that's a good idea to keep it, in that Lucite holder. Sometimes, especially paper items like a Wheaties box, will get dented, even though you don't mean to. So good job on that.
Yeah. That's a great story, too, Michael. $350 bucks, man.
And I paid $4 for it. So
there you go, man.
Best investment I've ever made.
Now, also, Michael, I will tell you, a Will Perdue autograph is worth about $4.
Yeah.
That was my next question.
Go ahead.
I can't hear you guys. Yeah. So I have another piece of memorabilia. It's a Cubs baseball signed. I was sitting behind the dugout when I was a little kid, and I got Herman Franks and Champ Summers to sign it, and I want to know how worthless it is.
I mean,
you're going back to my childhood, Michael. I grew up on Herman Franks, man.
Yeah. That's all I ate for a whole summer was Herman Franks.
I think you'd have to pay someone to take that off your hands.
Yeah, I think so. All right, Michael, thanks, man. Enjoy your White Castle.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, take care.
I will, thanks. Right,
see you, man. It's a great story. Herman Franks. That was Herman Franks he was the Cubs manager in the 70s that I remember. Herman Franks did a lot of the kicking the dirt on the umpire. He was one of those guys who would argue a call and go out and kick dirt on the umpire. Big, round, rotund, beer belly Herman Franks.
Well, as I recall, the 1970s for the Cubs were not that good.
No. It's my childhood. They lost all the time when I was a kid. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That's a funny story. Do you think you can get me Will Perdue's autograph? Joe's on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a Ted Williams autographed baseball bat, and it's from Upper Deck Company. So it's authenticated, has a hologram on the bat and the certificate of authenticity.
So a Ted Williams signed baseball bat Upper Deck is pretty awesome. I mean, Upper Deck is pretty much ironclad as far as authenticity, along with Green Diamond Sports, which was Ted Williams' son's company. However, the autograph of Ted Williams and also Joe DiMaggio the past 5 years has really decreased immensely. So a baseball bat, even with that great COA from Upper Deck, you're only looking at maybe $600, $700. 5 years ago, it was maybe over $1,000.
Why have those autographs decreased?
Well, I think
everybody's dying.
Everybody's got them. Yeah.
No, everybody's dying.
Everybody's dying.
Well,
they don't know. You know, the younger people don't know who they were.
But the thing is, though, Mickey Mantle hasn't really decreased like Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio. I think that there were some big, let's say, Ted Williams collectors, and they have died. Or also, some of the collectors change interests. So maybe they're buying all this Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio, then all of a sudden they kind of get tired and they change to something else. Maybe they want to buy, I don't know, Roger Maris autographs. That happens.
Okay. So, all right, Joe, that decreased in value a little bit. It was worth more. That's weird when that happens. I mean, you'd think an autographed Ted Williams baseball
bat. Yeah.
It's Ted Williams.
Yeah.
He's a legend. Joe DiMaggio. These guys are legends, man.
No.
All right. Joe, thanks for the call. Michael, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll wrap things up here with Michael, take a few more texts and calls from you. If you've got some sports memorabilia and you're wondering what it's worth, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Triple Play Thursday coming up.
Hey, Triple Play Thursday.
Get your requests in. That is one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5 o'clock, and Steve Cochran at 6. Also, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about what you got. Halloween candy. What are you going to do with it? Well, what are we going to do with it? So we've got some origin stories about the names of great candy, and we'll tell you how it's scientifically proven that we can't stop eating Halloween candy. We'll wrap up some of the other Halloween stuff and get into some news stories as well. 312-981-7200. Michael Osaki from Baseball in the Attic is with us. He's a master sports memorabilia appraiser, and his website is baseballintheattic.com. Michael, welcome back.
Good to be here, Nick,
right,
as always.
All right, let's see if we can help some people out here. This is Paul in North Carolina. Hi, Paul.
Hey, I feel like such a rube following the Wheaties box story and the Ted Williams baseball bat, but I grew up in Minnesota, and I remember going to see the Twins, you know, Harmon Killebrew and Earl Batty and Rich Rollins, Jim Cott, you know, the original Twins.
Yeah.
And I have a yearbook from their first season. I think it was 1961. And some of the photos in there, I remember seeing a photo in there of Harmon Killebrew, and he still had his Washington Senators uniform on, and I would never part with it because it just brings back such great memories. But and it's not in mint condition, of course, but it's not all beat up. But I was just wondering what kind of value something like that would have.
Well, a Harmon Killebrew autograph, you know, he's in the 500 Home Run Club, Hall of Famer. It's only about $40-$50 for a Harmon Killebrew autograph, unfortunately. He signed a lot. Kind of like Bob Feller, they signed millions of autographs. And so these are legends,
yeah.
But the value really isn't there.
Yeah, and that's just the yearbook, 1961 yearbook. It has more sentimental value than money value.
Definitely.
For sure. All right, Paul, thanks, man. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Here is Will on WGN. It's not Will Perdue, is it?
No, Nick, okay. It's not.
Good morning, guys. So my mom was a nurse at Mercy Hospital, and she participated in like a bidding against doctors for benefit charities, and she bought a basketball signed by all the Bulls, Jordan, and you know, all the guys in the championship era. And I don't know the year, but it's in mint condition, and we don't have anything signed that it was for from them. But I'm just kind of wondering the value on that.
It could be worth $1,000 to $1,200, depending upon what year and the signatures that are on the ball. Also, it's important that the ball is an official NBA basketball as opposed to, you know, some other random basketball. And I don't know how much the item was purchased years ago, but a lot of times at these charity auctions, items will go for much more than fair market value because the money is going to a good cause.
Right, the money is going to charity.
Yeah, you know, trust me, my mom was very proud to outbid doctors, and she spent, I think, upwards of $4,000 on this.
Whoa.
But I applaud her for that because it was going to charity.
Right.
And the money is not the aspect here, but it was just like she came home and she said, "Hey, guess what, guys? I won this, and I beat all them."
Yeah, well, that's a great story. That's it's a great story. Yeah. Yeah, it is. But it's worth, well, you said grand, maybe?
A grand to $1,200.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, Will, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Will.
312-981-7200. There's Frank on WGN. Go ahead, Frank.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I got 3 signed baseballs from the Cubs and the Sox from, like, 68, 69, 70, or maybe 67, 68, 69. My mom used to work concessions for both, Kaminsky and Wrigley. And I know there's Randy Huntley, Ernie Banks, Glenn Beckard, Ron Sano, Don Kessinger, all of them are on there. What would they be worth? They are faded some now, though. Mm-hmm.
Of course, 69 was an important year for the Cubs, or maybe not so important.
No, it was important. It just sucked.
But, you know, those balls, anywhere from $50 to $150, maybe $200 on the top end.
On the top end of that. Okay. All right, we'll wrap it up here with a few texts. 847 area code says, a friend of mine has several baseballs signed by various sports figures. I think she said her uncle was Andy Pofko. Oh. What? And he got them signed at a yearly sports dinner. Are they worth anything? I can send pictures.
Yeah, definitely send pictures. Andy Pofko passed away a couple years ago.
Yeah.
He's actually, so anytime I think about Andy Pofko, I think about his baseball card from the 1952 Topps set. His card was the first card in the set, and that's a legendary set because it has Mickey Mantle's rookie card in there and also Eddie Matthews, which is the last card, number 407. But I would say anything from Andy Pofko or any athlete could potentially be valuable because they had intimate access. So definitely send pictures.
Yeah, send pictures along. And that's Michael at baseballintheattic.com. 630 area code. I have a Phil Russell Blackhawks rookie card from 1972. Is that worth anything?
$5 to $10.
Okay, so it's not worth that much. I have a Topps Lou Alcindor rookie card that I got when I was a kid. How can I get it graded to find out the condition? I'm in the Rockford area.
Yeah, so that could be valuable depending upon the condition. So it could be several hundreds of dollars. Send me a picture, and I can tell you what I think it will grade out at.
Okay, and then finally, 262 area code says, I have signed Ron Dane Wisconsin Badgers mini helmet. Could you tell me what that's worth?
Ron Dane from the Wisconsin, he was a running back. He had all these accolades. I think he still has some records. But he's kind of been forgotten about, probably about $20 to $25 for Ron Dane signed mini helmet.
Okay. And again, people, if they want to send you some stuff, you also send out your number as well.
Yeah, you can call me tonight, actually. I'll be up for another hour or two, 312-379-9090. You can call or text that phone number or email michael@baseballintheattic.com or find me on Facebook and Twitter.
All right. Michael, thanks a lot, man. Have a great time in Florida.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay, we'll talk to you next time. Michael Osaki, everybody. We got the news coming up next. Triple play Thursday. Yeah, man, triple play Thursday. Yeah. That's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in. We'll play them a little bit. 312-981-7200. Mark in Aurora picking Mike Oldfield on horseback in honor of Halloween ending. He's choosing all Oldfield songs, but not The Exorcist. For those people who don't know, Mike Oldfield is the one who composed the song Tubular Bells, which is the song that they used in The Exorcist, the classic Exorcist theme. That's a song by Mike Oldfield called Tubular Bells. So we're going to hear two more Mike Oldfield songs, courtesy of Mark. And, yeah, so there you go. And Halloween has ended. And, you know, here's the thing, though. What people don't understand is that, a lot of people don't remember that that song existed, you know, that album existed before the movie used it. And it's like the actual version of Tubular Bells is like 26 minutes long. It's like 26 minutes long, and it goes off into different tangents and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, Mark actually called in the triple play request, and he told me the story that it had been produced, and they had to get his approval for it, but that Mike Oldfield has never seen the movie because he thinks it would freak him out, apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, one of the reasons why people freak out is because of his music. So that, you know, that. So there you go. So Halloween 2018 in the books. And yesterday we did our Halloween spooktacular. Had a lot of fun with that. It was great having my future ex-wife, star of Evil Dead, Ash vs. Evil Dead, the beautiful Dana DiLorenzo, to kick off our spooktacular. And we had a lot of fun, great calls, talked about movies and TV shows and all kinds of scary stuff, listened to some scary clips and music. It was fun. And I was looking around on social media last night and was looking at some of the, because people, you know, I don't go out on Halloween. I was pretty much, you know, like during the big stretch where most of the kids go trick-or-treating, I was asleep. So I missed all of that stuff. But now, in this day and age, thanks to, like, social media, you don't have to go out on Halloween to look at costumes because people, you know, post, well, people post everything that they do online, and lots of costumes were posted online. Now, Dan, you got to see some costumes in your neighborhood and stuff.
Yeah.
What were the kids dressed up as?
You know, it was pretty standard stuff. Firemen, cops, ninjas.
Oh, ninjas.
Yeah. So, but it was nice you could actually see them. It was warm enough where most kids didn't have to wear a coat. So,
yeah.
Or wore a coat underneath. So,
yeah.
A couple princesses. And the best one we had, though, was a girl had taken a clear umbrella. She put a shawl over the umbrella and then put Christmas lights around the shawl. And she walked around as a jellyfish.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
That's pretty clever. Last night on Jimmy Kimmel, you know, they do a special Halloween show. He was dressed up as Mr. Cotter. He had and Guillermo was dressed up like Daisy Duke, and that was really kind of frightening. But they do this thing every year where they combine two things into one costume, and Kimmel has his costume crew make these costumes, and then what they do is he goes out into the audience. And the doorbell rings, the doors open up, and someone comes in with these costumes on, and the audience has to guess what the costume is because it's two things that have been combined. So they did, like, here's one. I give you the description. They had, it was a teddy bear came out, walked out, and had a bottle of beer in one hand, but he also had Deadpool's suit on. So he was Deadpool. So, okay, the next one, a basketball player with a tall African-American basketball player, facial hair, and a jersey that said number 23 on it, came out, but he also had an orange wig, a clown nose, and red stripes on his sleeves and big shoes. Any idea?
Nah.
LeBronald James. Sorry, LeBronald McDonald.
Very nice. So
it was a combination. And then I'm trying to remember some of the other ones. Oh, a woman came out with a gavel that also had a lightsaber on the end of it. She was wearing sort of like the Darth Vader outfit, but had the doily around her neck and big glasses. So
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Exactly right. So that was the things that they, that the combinations that they did. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that that there was Sia, the singer. She's got that white wig thing,
right?
You know, for people who don't know, she covers her face. She doesn't show her face, and she's and so they had a giant drumstick came out, like a chicken drumstick, with the Sia wig on with the Sia wig on top, and it was KF Sia. The person had no idea because they didn't get. They were like, the person in the audience was like, that doesn't look like a chicken leg. What is it? That doesn't look like a drumstick. So they criticized the costume because they didn't get it right. So they did a whole bunch of those, and that's always kind of fun to figure out what that one was. And it was funny because whoever, I don't know whether it was a little person or a kid who was in the Tedpool costume, because it was small, it was a little kid, but he had a hard time because once whoever came out in the costume came out, they would go stage left in the corner and then they would all line up. So it'd be like, I think they did like 10 of them or something. But when Tedpool came out, he couldn't find his way over to the other side. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg came over and helped him.
Nice. Over.
So here's a thing. The costumes that I saw on social media, like adult costumes, did you see some of the pictures from today's?
I have not.
Yesterday's Halloween party here. Patty had the best costume. It was like a Day of the Dead sort of skeleton figure, but the face paint looked exactly like Johnny from Karate Kid. You know what I mean?
Nice.
But she had like a full outfit. She had the best costume. I thought she had the best costume. The morning show were all like, you know, they were all in crazy, like, underwater things. There were, you know, the morning show, the Cochran show. And Rokan was a very impressive Hulk. His whole face, he painted his whole face green. He had a wig on and a giant green, like, muscle suit on. That was pretty cool. Ro looked pretty cool. And then there were people who were dressed as the Pink Ladies. Stephanie, our boss, Menendez, had like three or four different costumes yesterday. And one of them was Sandy.
Sandy.
Bad Sandy, though. You know, Sandy at the end.
Old, yeah.
Yeah.
Leather jacket Sandy.
Yeah, you're the one that I want, Sandy. That one. But yeah, no, they all put out, you know, everybody dressed up, and the pictures are really a lot of fun. But here's the one female costume that I saw that adults were wearing that I found no joy in, but I saw a ton of them. A lot of women, and I guess it's appropriate and depressing, a lot of women were dressed up as handmaids.
I did see that.
I mean, and I totally understand. I mean, you know, what's going on politically on this landscape right now and how popular that show was, but that's a really depressing, you know, costume.
Well, did you hear about the controversy a couple of weeks ago?
About Handmaid?
Yeah, a company had made sexy Handmaid's Tale costumes. Yeah. Oh, Patty's listening. She says, thank you. That was a very nice compliment.
She looks great. Tell her she looked fantastic. Well, I can tell her because she's listening. This is how it works.
Hi, Patty.
I talk into this microphone and people hear me. I guess that's how it works. I don't know. I've only been doing it for 33 years, so I don't know. Patty, you look great. You looked fantastic.
It was, yes. It was very good makeup.
Yeah, really beautiful.
And people, if you want to get, want to see it, WGNRadio.com.
Yeah, all of the, and they also have a section, they have like three or four different sections, because they have one with the Halloween party, they have one with just Cochran show, one with just Rose show, and then from the past, where you can also see a bunch of WGN family members from past Halloweens. I think one of my favorites ever was a few years ago at the Halloween party, where Jimmy DeCastro came as the Pope. I think that's one of my favorites of all time.
We'll have to ask Mary when she gets in about her janitor in a drum costume from 1972.
That is fantastic. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's at WGNRadio.com where they have all these pictures from the past, and some when they were kids, and some, you know, and it was a, we have to ask Mary. Remind me to ask Mary when she gets in here at 4:30 to talk about that janitor. It's a janitor in the drum costume, and it's awesome. It's all for the people. Well, I bet there are a lot of people that don't know. Younger people don't know what janitor in a drum is.
Was it a thing? Was it an actual thing?
Oh yeah, Dan. Oh, janitor in a drum was like Liquid Plumber. And it was in a drum, and you would pour. It was like a, that's what she's in, that thing that's around her. That's what the container looked like. It was like a, it was like, it was shaped like a drum, like the, that metal drum thing, and it was like liquid plumber. You would pour it. You would pour it in the toilet to clean up a clog, or you would pour it into the sink. You pour it down the drain, and that's what it was. Janitor in a drum, and it was maybe there was a janitor in a drum that was also. I think there was a product. I think janitor drum was a line, and you could. I think there was also like a. It was like a mopping soap product that you can use to clean the floors and stuff. So it was janitor in a drum. It was an actual real product that they sold, and that's my favorite. I'm glad you mentioned that one, because that was my favorite of all the old WGN family member photos of past Halloweens. That was by far my favorite one, and the fact that it was homemade, you know, that's pretty impressive.
Speaking of homemade, Patty sent me another picture. She kept working on the makeup after she went home, and it is stunning. So I will send you that picture. She sent it just to us. So I will show you that.
I have my phone off, so that's why.
No, via our text.
Oh, our text. Yeah, oh, she sent it to the text. Yeah. Okay, yeah. If you can, yeah, I'd love to see it. I would love to see it. Yeah, but you know, some people go all out for Halloween, man. I was looking, you know, like IMDb had like, you know, celebrity.
Oh yeah,
costumes. You know who goes insane and has like, and you know, like, because again, like what they did at WGN where they showed, you know, costumes past, IMDb did that with celebrities from like this year and years past. Consistently, the most elaborate and the most awesome and the craziest celebrity costumes, Heidi Klum.
Yeah, that's her thing.
Oh my God. I mean, just like, wow. I mean, stunning. And really creative and sometimes scary. And could she really? I guess she must love Halloween. So I was a little disturbed at Al Roker dressed up like Urkel. That was a little disturbing for me. So. But yeah, so the costumes were. By the way, for anybody out there, we're going to talk about Halloween candy, post Halloween stuff. What costumes did you guys see? Your trick-or-treaters, or if you went to a party, what were some of the costumes that you saw? Good, bad, clever, weird, scary. You know, we're doing a little post-mortem here on Halloween 2018. So jump in here with your text and your calls, telling us about the costumes that you saw, maybe what you wore, and that stuff. And we're going to talk a little bit about science and candy, which are two important things. So text, call right now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for the costumes that you saw for this Halloween. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday continues. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs, Mark and Aurora, another Mike Oldfield tune called Taurus 3, and he's dedicating this to Steve King because of the impressive guitar playing. All right. All right, how you doing, everybody? We're doing a little post-mortem Halloween 2018 thing here. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Halloween candy, how it got its name, and why you can't stop eating it. And again, I'm right on the verge of the sneeze. I hate when that happens, Dan. Ugh, it's right there. I don't know when it's going to happen.
And then I stay tuned, everybody.
And half of my brains go flying out of my nostrils. So before the break, we were talking about the Halloween party here at WGN yesterday, which had some really fun and cool costumes. I think the standout was Patty Vasquez. She did some, this was after the party when she got home, she did some modifying on the makeup.
Correct.
And sent us a picture via text, and I'm looking at it right now. Dan sent it to me. I'm looking at it right now. That's really impressive, Patty, if you're still listening. That's really, really impressive. That's creepy and cool. My favorite part, because she's like got a skull thing happening, and she had a really wonderful outfit on too, and it reminded me a lot of the Mexican Day of the Dead look, and she did some really great detail work. Dan, you know what my favorite part is?
What's that?
There's a little crack in the skull on the right side of her above her right eye. Where the skull, there's some shading there and a little crack.
Ah, yes.
That's my favorite detail. That's my favorite detail. It looks like her skull is cracked. Very creepy, and she's dedicated to it. Looks great, Patty. Really, really. I mean, that's a fantastic makeup job. Really great. So, Yeah. When I was a kid, I was always like Dracula. For the most part, because I loved vampires, I was always Dracula. I wanted to be the Wolfman, but the stuff never stuck to my face. It would always fall off. I tried to do. And then in the old days, though, you would have those plastic masks with the rubber band in the back that you would put on.
Right.
And, like, the eye holes were too small, and you would smash into trees and get hit by trucks and stuff. And then that was the thing was the costumes were so terrible in the 70s for kids. It was like a plastic mask with a rubber band you would put on. Okay? And then and it was like a plastic outfit that you would step into that I get, like, if you were, let's say you were Boo Berry, it would be a dumb plastic mask of Boo Berry with a rubber band, just put it over your face. And then you would put on this plastic little suit that would be the rest of Boo Berry. And that's your costume. Just like two pieces of plastic, one on your face, one on your body. And those were the costumes that everybody had in the 70s. That was, when you would lift up the mask and put it and rest it on your head when you would look in to see what candy you got, because you couldn't see. And then half the time you'd have to have that thing on your head just across the street, because otherwise you'd get hit by a truck. But those were really popular in the 70s. That's the kind of crap that we wore, like, on a regular basis every year in Halloween time. And, obviously costumes have gotten much more elaborate and makeup has gotten much better. Have you ever seen those tutorials on how people do weird stuff with makeup?
Oh, sure.
They're so weird, man. Some of them are so weird and, like, three-dimensional, where they turn their face into something else.
Yeah, one of our listeners texted in a picture of a friend of theirs who's an art teacher, and she did half her face as the wolf and the other half of the face regular for Red Riding Hood. And,
ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the stuff they can do with makeup now. But, yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh, another one that they had, the combo that they had, Dan? He was a clown from It, okay? Scary enough. But his body was, the rest of the body was My Little Pony. So it was My Little Penny. My Little Pony-wise. It was My Little Pony-wise. That's what it was. And the girl who he was asking didn't know that the name of the clown in It was Pennywise. Like, I guess maybe she just forgotten. So she was like, my little It? My little Itty? Itty the Pony? It? Because she just couldn't think of the name of Pennywise. She couldn't think of the name. So it was My Little Ponywise. Does it? And they do that every year. Every year Kimmel does it. I'm sure that they've got it on. I'm probably on YouTube. The whole segment's probably on YouTube. And there are more that I'm forgetting, but they were really clever. We were talking about the etiquette, Halloween etiquette. Usually you see really tasteless costumes. Sometimes like really tasteless costumes. Like I remember Halloween of '95. There was like OJ and Nicole costumes that were like, man, you can't do that. You know what I mean? Like it was just, that's not cool, man. So just be sensitive about that kind of stuff. Sexy handmaids. That's just ridiculous. So, but anyway. All right. Well, those were some of the costumes that we've been talking about. If you guys want to jump in, if you have pictures, send them. Text 312-981-7200. If you saw any really cool costumes, who did you see trick-or-treating around the neighborhood? What kind of costumes did you give candy to? And we're going to talk more about post-Halloween 2018, and we're going to concentrate a little bit on Halloween candy. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. News is next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday is continuing. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! That's one artist, three songs. Mark and Aurora, that's Mike Oldfield with Maggie Riley, To France. So get your requests in now at 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. We've been talking about a little post-mortem Halloween 2018 here. And did you see any clever costumes and trick-or-treaters? What were they wearing? 312-981-7200. Yeah, that's the phone number for talk and text. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. At 5, Steve Cochran at 6 on your Thursday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Oh, I just remembered another one of the costumes, Dan. I just remembered another one of the costumes. that that was on Jimmy Kimmel, the combination costume. All right, so it was the body and the costume was the Black Panther, the from the head to the toes and the arms, but the hands were two toothbrushes with toothpaste, and the head was a giant tooth. And he, when he came out, he was brushing his, he had the brushes rubbing the tooth head, but the body was the Black Panther.
Got me.
Black Panther. He was Black Panther. So I thought that was pretty funny. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in for talk and text. We're wrapping up Halloween 2018 with talking about some of the, you know, crazier or cooler costumes. And also, we're going to talk about some Halloween candy. We have your favorite Halloween candies and how they got their names. That's coming up. But first of all, there is a scientific reason why you can't stop eating Halloween candy. There's a scientific reason for it. So, you know, if you feel guilty about eating an entire bowl of Halloween candy, it's okay. It's science. Don't, you shouldn't feel guilty because it's just science. A bowl of Halloween candy is enough to frighten any healthy eater. After just one piece, it feels impossible to stop until you get a stomachache. You might assume that sugar is the sole reason that Halloween candy is so hard to resist, but Halloween candy's hold on you goes beyond sugar alone. You can just keep unwrapping and popping those little suckers, says Rachel Pojednik, an assistant professor of nutrition at Simmons University. But that wouldn't happen if you walked into an office and there was a bowl of white sugar on the table. It's the convergence of sugar, fat, and salt, the trifecta of many candies, Halloween or otherwise, that really revs up the hedonic eating system, Pojednik says, referring to the well-documented phenomenon of eating for pleasure rather than physical need. Studies have shown that sweet or fatty foods can activate pathways in the brain associated with pleasure and reward, kicking off processes that can compete with or override signals that regulate normal hunger, sometimes causing people to overeat out of pleasure, not hunger. So, Dan, this explains John's Pizzeria.
Oh, yeah.
This totally explains John's Pizzeria to me. John's Pizzeria, which is on Western, 2000 Northwestern, not very far from Margie's Candies, best pizza in the city, best thin crust pizza in the city. And every single time I've had a pizza from John's, I eat much more than I need to. So this is right now, it's science. That's the problem. Because there, I get so much pleasure out of eating John's Pizza that I just don't, I don't stop. I've had enough. And I don't stop. I can eat an entire pizza from John's. And now I understand why. Because my brain is just shooting wonderful things. While salt, sugar, and fat are all tasty on their own, food scientists and food companies also noted in a 2013 book aptly titled Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us, have long known... they become irresistible when they come together. The hedonic effect may even transcend a candy bar's ingredients. Pojednik says, we have these really complex neurologic systems where learning and memory and pleasure all come together, she explains. That's why when you walk into the office and see that Reese's peanut butter cup, your mouth literally starts watering. You will automatically start salivating because you have the memory of that pleasure, so that cycle sort of continues. Any palatable food can spur this effect, but something like Halloween candy, which is often linked to nostalgia and positive memories, is likely to trigger an even more intense reaction. We've all had experiences with food where there's this really wonderful memory around it, and we have this pleasure memory that goes along with it, Pojednik says. It's not just pleasure from the taste or the smell of it, but also the situation that goes along with it. It can be difficult to outsmart these bodily mechanisms, though. Some research suggests that consistently choosing healthful foods can eventually rewire your brain to prefer them. Until that happens, Pojednik says, mindful eating is the best way to avoid an accidental candy binge. Next time you're faced with a mountain of bite-sized chocolate bars, slow down and take a minute to ask yourself, do I actually want or need this? Partly, it's recognizing that cue, which is so hardwired. But don't beat yourself up if you give in to the temptation, Pajudnik says. There are moments and times when giving yourself a treat is really fun and an awesome idea. And there are other times when you have to have a little more mindfulness around why you're feeling the way you're feeling. You're not going to be able to suppress those feelings. There's absolutely room for it in your day-to-day life. Well, that explains it all. Sit down and eat an incredible bowl. Now, Dan, what are your, you know, the, like, we've talked about this before, but what food or snack could you just devour? We've talked about this. What tell everybody what couple that you have.
Tortilla chips primarily is the one. I will unabated will eat an entire bag in one sitting. I love the salty and you know, that obviously extends to things like Fritos and things like that, but tortilla chips
is your weakness. What do you guys have? Anything that you just like binge on because your brain is like it gives you so much happiness? And now let me ask you this. I understand that you enjoy the tortilla chips. Do you have any kind of special memory attached to tortilla chips? Do you have any experiences in the past that you really loved?
No, you know, the closest thing I can think of is to the Fritos. I remember we were staying. It was one of the first sleepovers I could remember at my Aunt Mary Kay's house.
Uh-huh.
So I was old enough to be like, this is awesome, you know, and we get to eat things we normally don't eat, and my parents aren't here, and I can act goofy. And, like,
right.
She had given us a bag of Fritos to, like, share between my brothers and I had it in my hand. And by, like, the time, like, 45 minutes later, I had eaten the entire bag by myself. So so maybe that's it, you know, just
it might be
the first
back
sleepover.
To that. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what I don't, I have a lot of fun memories attached to thin crust pizza. I don't know why it's specifically John's that I overeat, because it's my favorite thin crust pizza. That's why.
Yeah. I mean, I know, founder notwithstanding, but I love Papa John's pizza, and that was my pizza from college.
Yeah.
You know, so I know that there's, you know, warm feelings associated from that.
Yeah. But John's is not the pizza I grew up on. I didn't discover John's Pizza until maybe 10 years ago. Oh, no, more than that. Probably 15 years ago. Maybe about 15 years ago. So it's not my childhood pizza. My childhood pizza is Pete's on Western. Pete's Pizza on Western. That's where we ordered from all the time. And I, you know, when we were over at the factory, when we were at the prop theater,
right,
we would have, you know, like maybe an opening night, a post opening night, or we would feed the crew for building a set and stuff. We always ordered from Pete's, and I did find myself at the factory after like painting a wall or hanging a light, downing a lot of Pete's pizza. So that, I think there is something. But the weird thing is John is not like Pete's pizza. John's pizza is like John's pizza. It's more similar to Vito and Nick's than it is to Pete's. But yeah, but I could eat, I swear to you, man, every time I have John's pizza, I eat more than I ever do of any other kind of pizza. I know my limit when I'm eating thin crust pizza. I know how many pieces are normal in one sitting. And I go way beyond that whenever I have John's pizza. It's the best. It's just the best. But I'm trying to think of, I could wipe out, see, I could, you know what, I one of my favorite sort of snacks, and this is like a salty thing, because I like the salty stuff more than the sweet stuff, but I like the sweet and salty together, which is now that deadly combination that everybody's doing, which that they were just talking about in that article. But it's the Crunchers, you know, the Crunchers potato chips? The jalapeno Crunchers with French onion dip.
Wow.
Oh, man. I remember I was, I guess there was an emotional thing attached to it too, because for some reason I was going through a really bad breakup, and I don't know, and I ate like an entire, I had I had like the Crunchers jalapeno and the French onion dip, and I ate like an entire tub and almost an entire bag of those chips. And, you know, and I was just like, I couldn't get enough of it. I'm also like, if you put like some Wheat Thins in front of me, a butter knife, and a log of liver sausage, I'm set for the night. I will eat all of it. All of it. But I really don't, it's not so much a sugar, you know, like a, I don't have as much of a sweet tooth, although I was going a little crazy when the Dum Dums were in the office. I went a little nuts with the Dum Dums, because the sugar will do that to you. But it's not so much candy that I can eat. Like, you know, like for me, like the Reese's pieces or the Reese's peanut butter cups, two of those, fine. I'm not going to eat like, you know, because in the in one bar, when you get the one candy, it's just two
right.
cups. That's fine with me. I'm not going to buy like five of them and shovel peanut butter cups in my mouth. I enjoy peanut butter cups, but so I don't know. Is there a candy that you particularly like?
You know, it's definitely chocolate. I would. That's a good question. I'm trying to think. I mean, the only candy bar I've eaten outside of Halloween is a Snickers bar. Just occasionally I'll get a craving for that, and
yeah.
I'll buy a regular one of those. But, yeah, I mean, my parents have Kit Kats that were supposed to be used to help potty train Emily, and I end up eating them a lot. And Twix are solid. You know, the Milky Way, Three Musketeers, you know,
the classics.
The classics,
yeah. The classics. When we had that opinion piece that we were talking about last week where the guy ranked the candy, mm-hmm. you remember how low he ranked Snickers?
Yeah, it was relatively low on the list.
God, what is wrong with you? Like, Snickers is like the definitive candy bar. When I think candy bar, in my head, when I think candy bar, Snickers is the first one that pops into my head. That's like, that's the definitive candy bar. And then the guy was complaining because his mouth hurt because he threw a bunch of Skittles in his mouth. Was that what it was? And he cut his mouth.
Right, yeah.
The guy doesn't know how to eat. Don't blame the Skittles for the fact that you don't know how to eat. You put 600 Skittles in your mouth, you're going to cause damage. It's not the candy's fault. Don't blame the Skittles. So, all right. Yeah, and if you guys want to jump in here, 312-981-7200, if there's food that you can just devour in one sitting. Like an entire bag, an entire box, just because it's associated with pleasure, and it's okay to do that every once in a while because it's science. We've just discovered that there's nothing you can do about it. It's science. So, and then we'll talk a little bit about your favorite Halloween candies and how they got their name. And if you guys want to talk a little bit about Halloween 2018, how that worked out for you, costume wise, candy wise, and binge food. What do you binge on? 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a break, and we got more coming up after this. Squat. And he did get that nickname from what do you immediately think of? Jeff Wayne's musical version of The War of the Worlds, and that is Eve of War. I've never even heard of that. Now, I know why Squat chose that, because yesterday marked the anniversary of the legendary... Orson Welles production, radio production of War of the Worlds that sent everybody into a frenzy and they went nuts. Thought it was really happening. You know, I remember, Dan, there was a TV movie, an ABC movie of the week, a TV movie that they made about that night. And I can't remember what it was called. And I can't remember who was in it. But it was one of those big, you know, Dan, it was one of those big TV movie of the week event things.
The Night That Panicked America?
That sounds right. Who's in it? It's 70s, right? From the 70s?
Yes. 75.
That sounds exactly what, right.
Vic Morrow.
Oh, Vic Morrow. Did he play Orson Welles?
I don't know. Paul Chenard played Orson Welles.
Okay.
Cliff DeYoung, Michael Constantine.
Wow.
Eileen Brennan, Meredith Baxter, Tom Bosley, Will Gear. And John Ritter.
Great cast. Also, classic ABC movie of the week cast, though. But that's a true story. People went nuts. They thought...
Although, you know, it's funny. I saw a headline today that it might not have been... It's like become an urban legend. It might have been not as big
as everybody claims it is.
I didn't read the article. That was the headline intimated.
Okay. Hey, we were talking about Halloween candy, Dan?
Yes.
And... Oh, and by the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. That's coming up here on the show. And you're going to find out the origin of how your favorite Halloween candies got their names. But since we're talking about Halloween candy and food that you gorge on, that you can binge on, I found this dumb chart that's on a Facebook page. The signs as Halloween candy. So... your birthday is coming up in about 3 weeks.
Yep.
What sign is would that be? What sign?
Scorpio.
Are you? I should know that. I'm married to Scorpios.
Oh, there you go.
I should know that.
What does that say for our future? Yeah, Vic and I are Scorpios.
That's right. Vic is a Scorpio as well. All right, well, let me see what you guys are. Okay, do you know what Halloween candy you guys are?
What's that?
You guys are Twizzlers.
I do enjoy Twizzler. That was my icebreaker at parties. I'd just bring Twizzlers, and everybody loves Twizzlers.
Everybody loves Twizzlers. You can make Ronda Rousey laugh with a Twizzler.
I could.
She's not going to punch you in the mouth if you just go, here's a Twizzler. She will laugh and not beat your ass.
Is there an explanation?
No.
It's just
one of these stupid, it's just some stupid thing that somebody put together. It's on a Facebook page of a friend of mine. So that's Scorpio is Scorpio. I shouldn't remember. How did I not remember that November is Scorpio? How is it possible that I don't remember that? Because my first ex-wife was born on October 30th. And my second is November 15th. So I should have remembered that. All right. So I'm Cancer, born in July. And do you know what my candy is?
What's that?
Candy apple sucker. You know, that's not too far off considering my obsession recently with Dum Dums. And they've got the apple flavored Dum Dum. Let's see. How about, a Libra? You ready for Libra?
Mm-hmm.
Twix. Sagittarius, you are Airheads. And I don't mean that you're an Airhead, that's your candy. Capricorn, M&M's. That's a good one. Aquarius, candy corn. One of the most divisive. Did anybody get candy corn? Did your kids get candy corn at all?
I did not see any candy corn.
Oh, man, come on. Has Emily ever had candy corn? Does she know what candy corn is?
I don't think she does.
Oh, you got a teacher, man. Are you just trying to keep her away from candy corn? Is that what it is?
Yes, you know.
let's see. Pisces, if you're a Pisces, you're a Reese's. Oh, look at you. See how they did that now?
Yeah, I thought they would have gone Gemini with the Twix, but...
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, but...
They didn't. Aries. Aries would be Sour Patch Kids. My mom's an Aries. Taurus would be Starburst. Leo would be pretzels. That's not candy. It doesn't say chocolate-covered pretzels. It just says pretzels, and the picture is a pretzel.
Although we did get bags of pretzels.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, we discovered also that, like, even salty food items, like people give out little bags of Doritos or Cheetos and stuff like that. Virgo, that's my dad, Three Musketeers. And then finally, I don't understand why they're doing this. What Gemini? Dan, can you look up when Gemini, what time period, what month?
I believe they are June.
June is Gemini? Yeah, that's probably true, because I think this is in order from Halloween on.
May 21st to June 20th.
Okay, these poor people who were born May 21st to June 20th, they're a toothbrush. So if you're going through your Halloween candy, if you pull out some Twizzlers, that means that's Scorpio. If you pull out Starburst, that's a Taurus. The candy apple sucker is a Cancer. But for some reason, a toothbrush goes with Gemini. How did that happen? How did Gemini draw the short straw? Why didn't they have somebody be a penny? Well, I mean, if you're going to put a toothbrush in there, you may as well just have you going through your candy bag and you get pennies. Anybody give out? Did anybody give out toothbrushes or anything?
No toothbrushes, but they did do one. Northwest Highway did a business Halloween walk on Saturday, so the businesses
on Northwest Highway.
On Northwest Highway, you could, if they held an orange balloon outside the door, you can go in, and the dentist gave away pretzels and toothbrushes. So I was like, all right, that's a good way to be like, hey, I can't endorse this, but I'm not going to be,
pretzels and no, that's okay. Especially if you're if you're not a dentist and you're just some dude in a house and you give kids toothbrush and mini toothpaste, you're a jerk. But I can understand it. And it's cool that the dentist gave out pretzels. That's cool. Didn't give anything really crazy chocolatey. Here are some pretzels. Brush your teeth afterwards. That's okay. But if you are not associated with the dental society in any manner and you hand out toothbrushes to kids, you're a jerk. So, all right. We're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, if you guys want to jump in with any of the stuff that we've been talking about, great Halloween costumes, weird ones for this year, what is your binge go-to food? We're also going to find out what your favorite Halloween candies and how they got their name. All right, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Live in the Allstate Skyline studio, we are here till 5 a.m. We are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get those requests in, 312-981-7200. Peter Indicator wrapping up his Triple Play request. Also from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, Hot Patootie. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Yesterday was Halloween. We were talking about Halloween post-mortem 2018, talking about some of the great creative, weird, and funny costumes, candy, and food that you can binge on, that just eat and eat and eat. And we got some history stories here about where the names from certain candy, Halloween candies came from. And that's what we've been talking about here. And if you want to jump in with any of this, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. How about Reese's peanut butter cups? Harry Burnett Reese started working for the Hershey Chocolate Company in 1916 as a dairy farmer. But after leaving and returning to Hershey's a few times over the following years, Reese set out on his own. His great peanut butter cup invention was supposedly inspired by a store owner who told him that they were having difficulties with their supplier of chocolate-covered peanut butter sweets, so he made it out. And that's where his peanut butter cups came in. And of course, the classic Hershey's or Reese's peanut butter cup commercials, there are some of the, you know, if you think about it, a pretty ridiculous ad campaign. Because it would be, Dan, do you remember that you got chocolate in my peanut butter and you got peanut butter in my chocolate?
Oh, yeah.
Which I always found really weird because it would be like, you know, a construction guy would be like on a ladder eating a you know, chocolate bar. And then, you know, a person would be walking around like underneath the ladder eating peanut butter out of a jar, and then suddenly the chocolate would fall into the construction worker would break off a piece of the bar, and it would fall into the other person's jar of peanut butter. Does anybody walk down the street eating a jar of peanut butter? I really don't think that that's the case. And then, hey, you got chocolate on my peanut butter. You got peanut butter on my chocolate. And then they taste it and go, ooh. And they did that campaign for a long time, and I don't know how many different situations that they had where people would, who one person would have peanut butter, one person would have chocolate, and they would bump into each other or knock into each other. I don't know how many scenarios they had, but just the idea of that is completely ridiculous. Do we have a little example of that?
Oh, I will pull that up, but oh, okay. I was going to ask you about the Reese's peanut butter thing they're doing for this Halloween. Did you see the news story that they did?
No.
They set up basically vending machine type, you know, setups around the country, and you bring in your bad Halloween candy that you don't want, and you put it in a bin, and you put it into the machine, and then it spits out some Reese's peanut butter cups for you.
Wow. That's pretty cool. No, I didn't hear about that. Do they are they going to put it? Are they going to put any machines in the Chicago area?
I don't know. I just saw the headline and then like a basic story.
Chocolate.
Peanut butter.
Hey.
Oh, hey! You got your chocolate on my peanut butter.
You got peanut butter on my chocolate.
What?
What?
Delicious. Two great tastes that taste great together. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Real milk chocolate delicious peanut butter.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
And Reese's Crunchy Peanut Butter Cups topped with chopped peanuts.
Now what was the situation there? Just two people walking down the street?
Well, yes. For some reason, one of them was dressed as a cowboy.
So there's a cowboy walking down the street.
Yep.
Is he?
He's eating Saturday Night Fever. He's got headphones on. She's got headphones on, and they just bumped into each other.
Oh, they bumped
in.
Now, is she eating a jar of peanut butter?
She is eating a jar of peanut butter.
That, what? Nobody does that.
And then an old man, the old man who looks like he works at a candy store, gives him the Reese's.
Oh, he gives him the, here, try this?
Yep.
Oh. Hey! You got peanut butter in my chocolate!
The girl looks like she's somebody, like,
who that was one of her first commercials?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, I always thought that was just completely ridiculous. That, you know, nobody walks down the street eating a jar of peanut butter. That's not a portable food. You don't walk around eating a jar of... Well, it is portable because you can put the lid back on it, but I don't... You know, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
The candy exchange vending machine, unfortunately, was only available in New York City for 5 hours on Halloween night.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, because they're not going to have it available longer than that. And it had to be on Halloween night?
Yes.
So you had to immediately get the bad candy, and you had to get it. I'm assuming it was in Manhattan.
They can make the exchange between 4 p.m. and 9 p.m. outside Washington Square Park on Fifth Avenue.
There you go. Wow, I wonder how many people. I wonder how that turned out. I wonder how many people took advantage of that. I bet a lot of people did.
I bet a lot of people did too.
Man, if I lived in New York and I had crappy candy, you bet your butt I'd get down to Washington Square Park and just start throwing that stuff in there and getting me some Reese's. And then I'd walk home eating a jar of peanut butter going, hey, you got chocolate in my peanut butter. This is the stupidest commercials, I swear. We got some more texts coming in. Some of the stuff we're talking about. What do you binge eat? And some of the other things. Paul says, by the way, it's 312-981-7200. Paul says, on Make Your Own Taco Night, I just can't stop eating them. Yeah, tacos are pretty fun when you got your Make Your Own Taco thing going. Eat a few more of those than you need to. 630 area code says, when my brother was a kid, he ate a whole bag of Fritos, and he puked, and he never ate them again. Yeah, that'll put you off a little bit. You get very sick on something, you know. You'll put the kibosh on eating that item in the future, perhaps, if you get really sick from eating it. For instance, I can't do anything cherry flavored because I was in the hospital a bunch of years ago and they had to do a test on my stomach, so they had to clear my stomach out and I had to drink this very, very incredibly overly insanely cherry flavored liquid that was supposed to clean my gut out. And it was so incredibly cherry flavored, and it was, you know, they gave it to me. It was in a bottle, and I had to pour it in a cup on ice and drink it on ice. And I had to drink the whole bottle, and it was just so strongly cherry flavored. And then what happened after I drank it is not something I'm going to discuss on the radio. But let's say I don't like cherry flavoring anymore. I can't do it. Anything that's sort of like cherry flavored, I can't do it. I kind of stay away from cherries too. So that one bad experience, you know, the kid ate a whole bag of Fritos. He puked. He's like, I'm not eating Fritos anymore. That'll happen. 269 area code says, I binge eat anything with fried dough, from pierogi to Chinese pot stickers. And yeah, pot stickers are good, man. 630 area code says, slow pokes are the best. Some people don't like the slow pokes. That's one of those divisive candies. All right, you ever wonder where Skittles, the name Skittles, came from?
Yes.
And by the way, don't eat more than like 30 of them and then blame the candy because you cut up your mouth. Skittles originated in the United Kingdom, where Skittles is a type of bowling, either on lawns or on a tabletop in pubs. The phrase beer and Skittles emerged to describe pure happiness. So the name for the candy likely emerged, it associated with fun. Hey, doesn't Homer at one point go into the Quickie Mart and ask Apu for Skittle-flavored beer? And Apu says, we don't have that. And he says, all right, well, forget it. Just give me a six-pack of beer and a bag of Skittles. Or something to that effect. I don't know why that's popping into my head. But, yeah, I just, and maybe it's not Skittles. It might be something else.
Skittlebrow.
Skittlebrow? So that's what it was. So he came in and says, do you have Skittlebrow? We don't have that. Okay, just give me a six-pack of beer and a bag of Skittles. So I guess that's where it came from. I guess maybe they were making a reference. The Simpson writers were, of course, going deep and making a reference to some old United Kingdom phrase that nobody uses in America. And of course, The Simpsons at that time, because that was one of those episodes when The Simpsons was in their wheelhouse. That was one of those mid-90s-ish episodes where, you know, that was like five seasons in a row where it was the greatest writing in the history of television. So, all right. Let's take a break here for some weather, and then we got a few more stories behind the names of Halloween candies. And if you would like to jump in with your stories on what you binge eat, 312-981-7200. 847 area code. I see where they're going with this, because Elvin Bishop did not have three hits. I can tell you that right now, but I see where they're going, because Mickey Thomas had the lead vocals on that. That's an Elvin Bishop song called Fooled Around and Fell in Love. So I'm assuming we're going to hear some Mickey Thomas or some Jefferson Airplane or Starship. So that's coming up. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's 312-981-7200. That's the phone number, 312-981-7200. So we've been talking about Halloween candy and how it's got its name and all that stuff. And we were just talking about Skittles. And Skittlebrow?
Skittlebrow.
Oh, man. Snickers. The candy bar was named after the Mars family horse. The Mars family was very into horses, even naming their farm the Milky Way Farm, which produced the 1940 Kentucky Derby champion Galahadian. So Snickers was the name of a horse. Wow. I did not know that. But now, you know, you think Snickers, you don't think horse. You think fantastic, tasty food item. But named after the family horse. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, nobody mentioned the Clark Bar. And they had Clark Bar and Butterfinger. Butterfinger was more of a peanut buttery taste.
Yeah.
But they were the same consistency. And Clark Bar was in a red wrapper. And their advertisement was they'd go through a zoo or that, and they would ask an animal, and what would you like today? And the animal would say, I want a Clark Bar.
What was that? And so the animal would talk?
The animal would talk. Yeah, they'd have their mouth moving, saying they wanted a Clark Bar.
I don't remember that
at all. And all of a sudden, you couldn't buy them no more, and they were very good. And another thing on pig out food, potato chips. But when we were kids, and still to this day, we liked them with hot sauce on them.
Mm.
And there's a place out here, Heine's Chicken, and he sells a hot sauce, just like they used to put on our chips. But that sauce you could put on your chips, chicken, French fries. I mean, it really brings out the taste on them.
Yeah.
And you start eating that, and you just keep picking. It's something that if it's there, you have to move it out of the way where you don't see it.
Yeah, otherwise you're going to eat the whole thing.
You're going to eat the whole thing.
That's right.
And your Mars candy out in Las Vegas, they have a tour. And I took this, oh, God, how many years ago? And they take you to the Mars Candy Company that's out in the desert, and they're making a special candy. They do it by hand. And they have you walk through the plant as a tour.
Oh, I see.
And it's on one of their tours that they have of the city or something. And I never even knew they had it, but it's out in the middle of the desert there near Las Vegas.
All right. You can
take those tours.
Okay. All right, Linda.
Enjoying the show.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Clark Bars are still around. They're not gone. Clark Bars are around. I don't remember those ads at all with the talking animals.
I couldn't find any online.
I don't remember it at all. But, Clark Bars are still around. How about a good old Zagnut? Where did that? That's not on here. The Zagnut's not on this in this article about where people got their name. Where did a Zagnut come from?
Actually, a texter actually texted in. I was just looking it up. The unknown is the short answer. Theories are the nut has to do with the flavoring on the inside.
Uh-huh.
And then zigzag was a popular term when the candy was first come out. It meant, you know, things were going crazy. Things were going zigzaggy, apparently. And so it might have had to do with that.
Okay. Zigzag was also a very, very popular brand of rolling paper for your joints. So I don't know if that had something to do with it.
This is the 30s, according to this. So who knows? Maybe
I don't know. I just remember Zigzag was the most popular brand of rolling paper for your hooch. I remember that. Let's see. Here is John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello. Back in the 1970s, I had a game called Skills Bowling, which was a little miniature bowling alley, you know, tabletop with little, like, 3-inch tall bowling pins, and then the ball was on a swinging kind of pendulum. And then they also came out with Skill Pool, which is like a mini pool table where the ball, you know, swung the ball, which was like hanging on a string.
Right. Yeah, that's where the Skittles came from. That's a UK thing. They would have them. Yep. They would have them on tabletops and pubs and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, Skittles bowling. I wonder whatever happened to that. Do people have any of those lying around in their garages? A little Skittles tabletop thing. You can start. Maybe you can start a league. So, all right, John. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. 312-981-7200. Got texts here. 312 area code says, I don't do it while walking down the street, but I eat peanut butter directly out of the jar, and I get the same look when I do that from my wife as I drink milk directly from the carton. Yeah, the milk directly from the carton thing, you know the amount of milk I drink, Dan?
Yes.
I go through a gallon in less than a week, and I live alone, so I drink a lot of milk. But it's weird, I live alone. I could easily just, because nobody else is going to drink the gallon of milk, I could easily just drink it out of the gallon, but I don't, out of the bottle. I pour it into a glass or a cup. But I wouldn't do that if I were living with someone. If it were, you know what I mean? I wouldn't, like, when I was living with the girls that I've lived with in the past or roommates that I've had in the past, I would never drink out of the milk, out of the container. So wouldn't last long enough for me to drink out of the container. All right, let's take a break. By the way, we have a Blackhawks Express. It's so weird to follow the Blackhawks and then play the Express, because we followed the Blackhawks at the beginning of the show this morning. It was a late Blackhawks game, and we came on right after post game. We came on early at 12:30. So we're going to have Blackhawks Express coming up, and then that's coming up as well. But the news is coming up right after this. Oh, it's funny. It's funny, Dan.
What's it?
I can't hear that song. By the way, it's a triple play Thursday. You make your play Thursday. And 847 area code, getting around the whole Elvin Bishop thing by having Mickey Thomas, and now he can play Starship now as part of his triple play. It's Jefferson Starship with Jane. But here's the thing about that song. I can't hear that song anymore without thinking about the Netflix series based on Wet Hot American Summer, because that's the thing that's the theme that they use at the beginning of every episode. So every time I hear that song, it's not like I hear that song a lot, but every time I hear that song, I absolutely, without question, think of Wet Hot American Summer.
Thumbs up or thumbs down on that series?
Way up.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's really funny and an extraordinarily talented cast, like from everybody, like some of the biggest, you know, some of the best comedy names all in that thing.
I saw the people who were in it. I haven't pushed, you know, I haven't.
It's really funny.
Watched it yet.
It's really, really funny. And yeah, no, it's cool. It's definitely worth seeing. And that the song that we just heard, it will be in your head for, you know, because I binge watched the seasons. Each season took me maybe 3 days to watch. I just watched them all in a row.
Okay.
And yeah, no, it's great. It's great. But now I can't hear Jane by Jefferson Starship without thinking of that TV show. So we've been talking about wrapping up Halloween 2018 in the books, and we're talking about the origin names of some candy for Halloween. And, Dan, are you guys just going to demolish all the candy? I mean, what's going on there? You're going to try to steer clear of it?
We have separated it out. So the girls are only going to have a couple pieces left by the time they wake up this morning. Eileen's school has one of those programs where, you know, you bring in the leftover candy and then it goes to kids in need.
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's where a lot of it is going. I can't say the same for my parents' house because my father, who might be up listening, so Dad, I'm going to out you in this one. He gives me holy heck every time I have a piece of leftover Halloween candy because they go to Costco and buy the 150-piece, mm-hmm. you know, all chocolate, Milky Way, Three Musketeers.
Yep.
Snickers,
yep.
And they just leave it by the front door. And so for a good, like, 8 months, I would eat it after Halloween. And he'd always be like, well, why are you having that? And I'm like, well, why do you have it out?
Yeah.
If it's out, it's supposed to be eaten. So yeah.
If it's here.
So it's a bone of contention in the old Shagrew household.
I see. So. I see. Well, that's a nice program, though. You can help out some other kids who could get some candy. That'd be nice. That's pretty cool. Now here's the thing that people are mixed on, because it'll be on Kimmel's show either tonight or tomorrow, which is this thing that a lot of people get very upset about, and that is when parents video their kids after they tell their kids that they ate all their Halloween candy, and then the kids have these really intense reactions to the fact that their parents ate all their candy. And Kimmel gets a lot of flack for that because it's like nobody wants to see their kids cry. Why would you do that to your kid? I personally think it's funny. Now, I don't have kids, but it makes me laugh. My favorite ones that they have are when the kids know, you know, maybe they've seen Kimmel's show and they're like, they're young, but they're like, this is Jimmy Kimmel. I know what's going on here. Those are my favorite ones. But like, you know, they had one kid, he's like, we ate all your candy. And like, they pulled the bag out, and the bag's empty. And one kid just like collapsed, just fell on the floor. But I understand why people hate it. I feel guilty when I laugh at it. But I totally understand why people hate it, because it's like, why would you do that to your kid? Don't torture your kid. Don't make your kid cry. Why would you make your kid cry? I mean, I really understand that reaction, but I don't care. It makes me laugh. So Bakery Guy says M&Ms were originally developed for soldiers because they were a chocolate candy that wouldn't melt. Also, I binge eat Father and Son's pizza. Father and Son pizza is good. Father and Son is a good pizza. Yeah. Susan can binge on cottage cheese and iceberg with iceberg lettuce. I don't really need the iceberg lettuce, actually. I could binge on cottage cheese. You know, iceberg lettuce, that's cool. You combine it. That's good. Just give me a spoon and a big thing of cottage cheese, and I'll eat it. I'll eat the whole thing. Let's see. 847 area code. Nick, do you remember the Snick Snack candy bar? I do remember the Snick Snack. 301 area code says, Clark bars were made by the same company that made Necco wafers, and the company went bankrupt and shut down. I didn't know that they were the same company.
Two very quick things. One, my father is up listening and texted only one piece a day when I come over. Number two, Mary Vandeveld has now joined us, and so we can ask her about janitor and a drum.
Okay, we have to ask. We talked about it a little bit earlier, Mary, and I was telling everybody that they can go to WGNradio.com and they can not only see the most current pictures from yesterday's Halloween party, but you can see pictures from Halloween past, and one of those pictures is a young Mary Vandeveld, and this was a homemade costume. Are you there, Mary?
We broke the microphone.
Oh,
apparently.
Hello.
There you are.
Sorry about that.
Okay, then that was a homemade costume?
Yeah, so I think I was in like sixth grade. This was my very awkward, unattractive year phase. Well, actually, like a 3 or 4 year phase I had. And, So I had the glasses. So this was before I got contacts in like sixth grade. So I think it was sixth grade before that. But so, yeah, a friend of my father's who worked for my dad was an artist, and he designed this. And janitor and a drum was a big product at that time.
Yes, it was. I had to explain to Dan what it was.
And what was it? What was it again?
It was
for clogging.
It was. I think there were two kinds of janitors in the drum. There was the one that you can pour into toilets or into sinks.
Yes.
And then I think there was a janitor in the drum that also you could clean floors with.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. But I remember the product. I remember because in the commercial, they would slam the janitor into the drum.
Yes.
On the table and it would go, boom.
It
would
make a big noise.
Yeah, a real big noise. So did you like janitor in a drum when you were
know.
A kid?
I mean, I think my mother must have used the product or something.
Uh-huh.
So I just decided, hey, that would be really cute. I could actually be the janitor in the drum.
Yeah.
And so I had it wrapped around me, and it was strings over me, and it was, it was cardboard. He made it out of cardboard.
It looks great.
It was perfect. I mean, this guy was such an artist, and he was also a silk screener. He made street signs, that's
yeah.
what my father
yeah.
did.
Yeah, yeah.
And so all the signs on the roads and everything. And, yeah, and then I just put, like, an engineer hat on that I look like a janitor somewhat.
Yep.
And I put my hair up, and... attractive. I would have never put this kind of stuff out online anymore, but now I don't care.
Yeah. I think it's adorable, frankly.
Yeah.
And it said that was the year was like 1972 or something.
I'm guessing it was around there.
And if people weren't around in 1972, Mary, that product was massively popular.
Oh, it was huge.
So, a lot of people who were younger, I had to explain
Dave Bennett's passing out candy, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Dave Bennett's passing out candy, everybody.
So the funny thing was, I went to this party, and every year my friend Joyce had a big, huge Halloween party, and she had prizes, great prizes all the time. And I won. I won first prize. I don't remember what I won, but
you won first prize with that costume?
Yes.
Oh, here's Dave right now coming in. Where is this all left over?
No trick-or-treaters.
I didn't have any either. Oh, wait a second. Can I take
had
a couple?
22 trick-or-treaters.
Yeah, 22.
About 22.
Thank 25. You.
It was much better than last year. Yeah,
thank
Dave
you.
Lives in a weird little, not cul-de-sac type of thing, but it's hard for people to get back there.
You had 22?
I did, and I don't have many because I don't have people on the other side of my street. I live on a path. So
oh, right. Just, yes, oh, that's right. That's
on
what
a prairie
me.
Path, so right. nobody's on the other side. So, and anyway, we don't get many kids. But we had the weather was so great yesterday.
It was. It was really good for
them. More than usual. The kids were running around on the other blocks like crazy. So I think it was a really good turnout.
Can I just say that the trick-or-treaters who didn't go to Dave's house are missing out because he's got the quality stuff.
So I just glanced. He has Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
He's
what else did he have in there?
I got Snickers, and he's got Take 5, which is my favorite candy bar of all time.
Look at that.
You never have a Take 5?
I had one once.
Oh, my God. It's like chocolate and caramel, peanut butter, and pretzels.
Those are the best.
Oh, it's the best. The Take 5 is the best.
I'm going to go grab one of those. My husband gave out mounds. I'm like, why are you giving out mounds? Nobody likes mounds.
I like mounds.
So I switched it up a bit, and I put some Skittles in there and whatever else we had laying around. I go, cut. There's no kids coming. Just give them everything.
Yeah. So that's cool. I think Dave's coming to bring you a Take 5.
Thanks,
Take 5,
Dave.
Man. See,
I'll have more.
The people who did not go to Dave's house, the kids who did not go, man, you missed out, because he's not playing around. Like, Dan, this is the top-notch stuff.
I've never had a Snickers Crisper. They're delicious.
Yeah.
You've never had a what?
Snickers Crisper. Dave is Willy Wonka this morning. He's got the good stuff.
Because Dave never eats it.
It's the right newsroom.
Eats candy.
Dave, you got I know, and that's a candy newsroom. The amount of candy that's in that newsroom and gum.
Oh, it's disgusting.
But Dave, you went all out. I mean, this is the good stuff. You're not giving the kids a bunch of crap.
I give all credit to my wife. Yeah. But we have no trick-or-treaters. We rarely get them.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things. We buy it every year just in case.
And then
I bring it in the next morning.
You bring it into work.
Yes.
But Dave, wasn't your dad a dentist?
Great. Yeah, so we never had candy.
So you got to make up for it now.
Yep.
But no, those Take 5. I just want to say congratulations to your wife for picking out the Take 5.
I will pass that along to her.
That's the best candy bar on the planet, as far as I'm concerned.
See, I didn't even know that, so that's good to know.
Oh, so good. A pretzel is involved, Dave.
Well, I'm okay with pretzels.
The sweet stuff,
the
not
salt.
So much.
Got to have the salt.
Oh, it's so good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, anyway, I'm glad that you won an award. I think you deserve the award at the party, Mary, for that costume.
I just wish I'm going to ask my friend Joyce because we're still friends. So I'm going to ask her what I won that year.
Yeah,
probably a Happy Meal or something because she always had the McDonald's.
I thought it was an adorable costume. And again, for people who were around at that time, janitor and a drum was huge.
And I thank my dad's friend Dick Schwartz for designing that.
There you go. All right, it looks great. And people can check it out at WGNRadio.com. All right, let's take a break. We've got weather here, and then when we come back, we've got a Blackhawks Express, an unfortunate Blackhawks Express to play back from last night's game, which seems like it just ended, right, Dan?
Yeah.
Because we came on right
about
after
six
the game.
Hours ago.
We came on right after the game. We came on early, and it was a late game. We came on after post-show. So we've been here since the game. Since the game was still going. So it's weird that we're going to play. This is the first time I think we've ever played an Express after watching the last part of the game here.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. All right, that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Starship with Sarah, 847 area code. Let me explain something to you, Dan. That song is not very good. But I watched the video 17,000 times when it came out. Because the star of the video was Rebecca De Mornay, 2 years outside of Risky Business. So I don't care. The song's not very good. I cannot tell you the number of times I've seen that video just because Rebecca De Mornay's in it. Lana from Risky Business is in that video. So, of course, I'm going to watch it every time it comes on. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. It is freezing in here. I'm literally shaking. The only thing that's warming me up is me chewing on take fives. I'd like to thank Dave and his wife. We were talking about candy bars and where the origin of the name comes from. Now, take five comes from, we don't have this, but there's five ingredients. And those ingredients are, and this is why it's the greatest, the combination of this is chocolate, caramel, peanut butter, peanuts, pretzel. What am I saying here? Is that not the greatest? How is that combination not the greatest? You know, it was really funny. I was talking about how much I love the Take Five when they first got, because I think the Take Five first got popular maybe about 13, 14 years ago. And I talked about them on the air. I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest candy bar I've ever had. And someone sent me a case of them. And I remember I brought them to the Factory Theater. We were doing a show and I put them in the green room and they were gone in like 20 minutes. So, all right, that's it. We're done. Dan, tomorrow, Herb Weissbaum, right?
Yes, Herb Weissbaum.
Herb Weissbaum is going to help us out with everything consumer-related. But right now we got a break because coming up is the news and the opening bell with Steve Grzanich.